from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. There's been plenty of national eyes on Missouri's 1st Congressional District Democratic primary over the past few months, especially since St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell chose to challenge incumbent Congresswoman Cori Bush. On the surface, Bush and Bell have a lot in common. They both come from North St. Louis County. They both came to prominence after a Ferguson police officer shot and killed Michael Brown. And they both defeated longtime incumbent office holders in seismic upsets, helping create a new post-Ferguson political reality in the St. Louis region. But lately, Bush and Bell's differences are getting a lot more focused and attention, especially as Bush faces criticism both locally and around the country for her sharp criticism of Israel. And while voter perceptions around Israel's military invasion of Gaza may not be determinative in deciding the outcome of the August 6th primary, it is undoubtedly playing a role in the tone, tenor, and fundraising of this high-stakes race. Joining us today is Wesley Bell, who has served as St. Louis County's prosecutor since 2019. Prosecutor Bell, thank you so much for joining us.
Jason, it's always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
This race features three candidates, you, Bush, and former Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal, who rose to prominence after Ferguson. And there are going to be people who supported all three of you who are dismayed that you're running against each other. What would you say to someone who doesn't understand why you're seeking the seat and why this matchup is even happening?
You know, first and foremost, this is how democracy works. You know, I believe that this district needs representation. Because we have a lot of issues in this district. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, this is not Beverly Hills or Martha's Vineyard where we have all the resources, they have all the resources in the world. We have issues that need to be addressed here. We have public safety issues here. We have to work with respect to attracting jobs and industry in this district. We have to work with respect to public safety and we have a gun violence issue here as well. And anything, the way our government is designed, you can't get anything done without building coalitions. And as the Ferguson City Councilman, as the St. Louis County Prosecutor, I have a track record of doing that. And that's exactly what you can expect from me as the next congressman from Missouri's 1st District.
After Congressman Jamal Bowman lost re-election this week, a lot of national commentators are turning their attention to this race. But I posted on Twitter, and I'll say to your face directly that the 1st District is much different from New York's 16th District. Like, the 1st District is a plurality Black district, and Black voters may have more pressing concerns than candidate opinions on Israel and Gaza. Would it be a mistake to draw conclusions about this race based off of Bowman's defeat?
I think that each district, each race is unique in its own right. And our district is a very diverse district, the most diverse district in the state. And I think as a result, there's unique issues that we have to deal with that are unique from other districts around the country. And so what happens in elections and on the other side of the country don't impact what's going to happen right here in this district. And what's important to me is to make certain that we are giving voters a clear choice, illustrating a clear distinction between myself and the other candidates. I've been a champion for reproductive rights as a prosecutor. I've been a big a champion for public safety, but also responsible public safety. We've expanded treatment programs for people struggling with mental health, substance abuse, opioid abuse. We created an unit to investigate credible allegations of wrongful conviction and have resulted in an individual who was wrongfully convicted being freed. But also we recognize that serious and violent offenders have to be held accountable. And that balanced approach of not doing anything I can't defend or explain is what I've made a record of doing or built a resume of doing, and that's exactly what you'll see me do in D.C.
Yeah, you mentioned reproductive rights, and there were several people who are not fans of yours who pointed out that your campaign sent out a tweet insinuating that your campaign had the backing of Planned Parenthood when that went exclusively to Congresswoman Bush. Now, I know your campaign sent out an amended tweet that it had been done in the past, but what would you say to people who think you're trying to play up an endorsement you didn't actually get in this race?
Listen, the bottom line is that one thing that all Democrats believe in is reproductive rights.
Most of them. There are some conservative Democrats I've met who are opposed to abortion rights.
Can we agree overwhelmingly?
Yes.
Most Democrats.
We'll agree with that point.
So, and even some Republicans, to be quite frank.
Right.
We support a woman's autonomy over her own body. We believe that women should have the right to make their own healthcare decisions. I've been supported by all of those organizations. And if, you know, tweets, you can't edit them, well, you know, unless you get the blue check mark. I'm not as savvy. And so, you know, when our folks make a mistake, we own it. We're accountable. We know that those organizations tend to support friendly incumbents, but have endorsed us. And we're going to continue to support those organizations because we believe this issue should not be used for political football. We believe that this issue is something that all Democrats should be rallying around because it's too important to play politics with.
So if you had the ability to vote on a bill that would codify abortion rights, would it be similar to like what Missourians will likely vote on in November where it goes up to fetal viability, or would you want to be even more expansive than that if you had the ability to do that, knowing that this is a hypothetical question?
You know, Jason, I think what we have to understand first and foremost is in Missouri, women have zero rights with respect to their reproductive decisions. Zero. Mm-hmm. When the Dobbs decision came down, it overturned 50 years of precedent. So I've talked to folks who were around when the Dobbs decision when Roe versus Wade came down, and now their grandchildren do not enjoy the same rights that they do. And so I think we need to codify Roe versus Wade.
Which again went to fetal viability.
We can have other conversations, but let's ensure that a woman has the right to make her own healthcare decisions. Let's reinstate 50 years of precedent that was taken away with the Dobbs decision.
So you've said multiple times it was important to support Israel after Hamas's October 7th attack. But since then, Israel's military has launched an offensive that's killed thousands of civilians and destroyed most of Gaza. And I read somewhere that even Benjamin Netanyahu's military leaders seriously doubt whether the goal of quote-unquote destroying Hamas is obtainable. So I'm not trying to say that your stance was an unconditional support of Israel, but it was a pretty strong support of Israel. Do you think that Israel's military has done a lot of really bad things since October 7th?
I think we have to put this conflict into context. And first and foremost, we want to see peace in the region. We don't want to see any innocent Israelis, any innocent Palestinians harmed. But I think we have to understand that we do have an obligation to stand with our fellow democracies, to be reliable partners to our reliable partners, and stand against terrorism. Because at the end of the day, Hamas is a terrorist organization. Hamas is an organization that is openly genocidal. They do not hide the fact that their goal is to destroy the state of Israel and also the West. And when you hear death to Israel chants, they're often followed by death to America chants. And so anyone that tells you they know what peace in the Middle East, what that plan is, they're lying to you. But I will say the structure of any peaceful resolution, I think, has to involve keeping that door open for a two-state solution. But also, it cannot involve a terror state with the capacity to fire thousands of rockets and end the peaceful resolution, what we had prior to October 7th. Yeah. I mean, there was a ceasefire in October 7th that Hamas violated, and they've said even recently that they will do it again and again and again. So it's a very, it's a tough situation. And, you know, again, I'm going to end where I began. We want to see a peaceful resolution. I want to be a part of the coalition that brings a peaceful resolution to that region. But it is a tough situation. But in the meantime, we do have to stand by our allies.
Are you convinced, though, that Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, wants a two-state solution? Because I'm not convinced that he wants it based off its own words. And I also have heard some extreme members of his cabinet express genocidal tendencies towards the Palestinians, too.
Jason, and you're not going to sit here and I'm not going to sit here and talk about Netanyahu's policies. I'm not doing that.
Understood.
I'm not part of his inner circle, and I have no intention of being in his inner circle. But what I'll say is that, you know, like in any free society, you're going to have criticisms that are fair. And just like we have fair criticisms of leaders that we've had, they're fair criticisms that you can make of folks in the Israeli government vis-a-vis Netanyahu. But what I will say is that what I can be clear on is that we want to see peace in that region. We don't want to see any innocent people get harmed on whether they're Palestinian, Israeli, we don't see anyone get harmed. But also, we have to stand against terrorism. It's a tough situation. My heart goes out to, you know, anyone who's lost a loved one in any situation. But I also say, Jason, we got to talk about the violence that we see right here in the city too, and in this region. And that's what a lot of folks that are showing up to the polls and that in this district are worried about the violence that we see here. You know, we see gun violence. We see all sorts of violence. And as a prosecutor, you know, I see these things up close and personal that we need to address right here at home. We have to attract jobs and industry right here at home that are impacting people. And so, yes, we care about national issues, and we're going to do everything we can to fight for peaceful resolutions and to make certain that folks don't get harmed. But we also got to work on issues right here at home.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next question. I asked you right when you filed, and I asked Congresswoman Bush the same question. I'm not convinced that the most important block of voters in the first district, which is the African-American community, since they make up a plurality, I don't think the candidate's opinions on Israel and Gaza is the number one issue. I just don't. I know that from anecdotally asking them and also from polling. Yet you see a lot of money from groups that support Israel pouring money to support you and attack Congresswoman Bush. I'm sure there'll be some that are critical of Israel attacking you. So if this is not the issue that's top of mind, why is there so much activity and money from people on both sides of this issue affecting this race?
You know, it's important to a lot of people. You know, yes, you're right. There are folks in this district who are not showing up to the polls with what's going on in the Middle East as their main reason for voting, and that's true. That doesn't mean it's not important. And so what I've been laser focused on is showing up to events, showing up to constituents, hearing their concerns, because, you know, we got to be able to do two things, three things, four things at once, and that means we do have to be concerned with our national security issues. And that is a national security issue. But also, we got to be concerned about what's going on right here in this district.
We're talking with St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell. He is running for the Democratic nomination in Missouri's 1st Congressional District. So let's talk about issues closer to home. And let's talk about Coldwater Creek, because one of our listeners, ABobby077 on Reddit, asks, will you continue to fight for those affected by Coldwater Creek and contamination affected areas along with current and former residents?
Absolutely. I think that that is something that is an issue, obviously, that's right here at home. And it's impacting a lot of folks right here at home. And I know Just Moms are doing a lot of advocacy work. We support them, and we want to I think that we want to make certain that we have the resources here to to clean it up, to address those issues, and for those who have been harmed or what have you, make certain that legislation is passed so that we can get them the support that they need. But it's a tough situation, and absolutely we are here. We're going to be advocating from here as well as from D.C.
You talked about public safety earlier, and I think you've been pretty critical of Congresswoman Bush for her support of defunding the police, which I think is defined in different ways. But I think for some, it's defined as reducing the amount of money going to specifically police and then transferring it to social service agencies. But I bring this point up all the time. St. Louis and St. Louis County have poured much, much more money into policing after 2017 tax increases, sales tax increases. I would say the results have been pretty mixed in general. Would bolstered investments in social service programs do more to reduce crime than simply funding more police? Or is it a both and?
You know, first and foremost, I think that when we hear the term defund the police, I think that there has not been a consistent definition, and it is a terrible choice of words. Let's just start there. It's a terrible phrase. As the son of a police officer, I recognize how hard that job is, and we understand that folks in my district understand that it's not about reducing the police or reducing their resources. Folks in my district want to see more resources for law enforcement. I was a part of the negotiating team with President Obama's Department of Justice, where we got body cams for every single police officer. We increased the number of resources. We increased pay. We increased training, treatment, all of those things for law enforcement because we recognize how tough that job is. When we look at what we've done in our office, for the first time, our office under my administration has social workers in our office. For the first time, our office has a prosecution-led diversion unit that has treated now over 3,300 people with a 3.9% recidivism rate, so a 97% success rate. We have not gotten one increase, budgetary increase for our treatment programs, not one. We've had to repurpose other positions to create those positions, but I've been a long believer that your budgetary decisions reflect your values.
Do you think you can get federal money to support programs like that all across the country?
Jason, that's exactly where I was going. We created a diversion advisory committee because the nature of substance abuse and mental health, these diseases, the nature of them are not that you raise your hand and say, come help me. And so a lot of organizations that have resources like Affinity Healthcare, places for people to help these folks, it's a challenge getting these folks in the door. But when prosecutors, when they come to our doors, it's because they've been charged with a crime. And so now we're uniquely situated to be able to offer the carrot and the stick. You work this program in good faith, we won't prosecute you. And so if we can expand that program and offer those resources to prosecutors' offices across the country, it has worked. And we have the numbers and the data to show that it works. So absolutely, that's something that I would look to get legislation to support.
Wesley Bell is one of three major contenders to represent Missouri's 1st Congressional District. We're slated to interview Congresswoman Cori Bush and former Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal on future episodes of the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Prosecutor Bell, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me as always, Jason.
We now welcome back St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg, who is listening to our interview with Wesley Bell. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hi, Jason.
Sarah, you covered the first district race last year. How is Bell different from Bush's last opponent, Democratic State Senator Stephen Roberts?
I'm going to flip the script a little on you and say I think it actually is more about how Bush is different than she was 2 years ago.
Ooh,
I
think flip then.
I think Bell has a lot more to lock onto with Bush than Roberts did back in 2022. At that time, Bush was only in her, first 2 years as a representative, and so there's more to go off of. I believe Roberts also went after her for her comments on, quote-unquote, defunding the police. I'm glad you had that discussion of that phrasing, and what that actually means. But also her positions on Israel-Palestine has drawn opponents, as well as the investigation on her campaign security spending, which included her husband. And I want to be clear, you know, Bush says she's done nothing wrong with that and isn't cooperating with that investigation. But that's still something folks can cling to. So in my opinion, it's less about the opponent than it is about Bush herself this time around.
Bell clearly has the support of some very politically active voters who do not like Bush's policies or rhetoric. But is that going to be enough to defeat her when in 2022 she was able to piece together such a strong multiracial coalition?
Mm-hmm, exactly. I'm not sure enough of those opponents live in her district. I think that many voters advocating for a ceasefire between Palestine and Israel are more in line with Bush's rhetoric anyway. So there's not really a loss there. And I'm going to take your word for it that, you know, Black voters have more pressing concerns than that. So I don't know. You know, I do believe she has way more opponents than she did, but I don't know if that's going to translate into a vote change.
It's not only polling, but like if I do ask, I have asked African-American voters individually about Israel, mm-hmm. Gaza. If they do care about it, everyone I've talked to so far has actually sided more with what Bush is doing, which is being critical mm-hmm. of Israel, than Bell. And possibly because they see some similarities between the Black experience and the Palestinian experience.
Yeah, I think that Bell is really, I wouldn't say counting on people to have really strong opinions about this situation between Israel and Palestine, but I think he's definitely expecting some flipped voters. And I don't know if those are there, honestly.
We've seen in recent past how a deluge of outside money can affect Missouri politics. We saw in 2016 that Eric Greitens won after third parties dumped a lot of money to help him. 2022, Eric Schmidt defeated Greitens after a lot of third party ads started attacking the former governor. How do you see money from groups like AIPAC's political arm affecting the race against Bush?
I mean, more money is going to help Bell, but that doesn't mean everything. I think, honestly, more money in the campaign probably would hurt Bush, but it depends on how many ads you see and the positions. And it's not surprising that money can make a difference. It's whether or not that does translate into voters changing their minds. But I definitely think they're going to be seeing more ads, mailers, you name it. I think they're going to see it.
It makes me somewhat glad that I got drawn into the second congressional district, which is not going to be nearly as hot as the first. Before we let you go, I think this race is going to be very nasty and contentious. Is it possible the rancor could turn voters off and depress turnout on August 6th?
For the primary, it's not an impossibility, but I think that Cori Bush has enough voters that love her and enough that do not love her that they are either going to get out the vote to keep her or to kick her out and to elect Bell or Maria Chappelle Nadal. Also, we have another candidate in that race that could mix things up. So I think I don't disagree with you. I think it's going to be a pretty nasty primary, but I think voter turnout is going to be pretty much what it would be. I don't think people are going to be turned off by it. It's politics, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I go back as a parting thought. Bill Clay, who used to represent the first congressional district, was primaried all the time. It almost became commonplace. I think this will be the future of the first congressional district, regardless of what happens. So first district voters should be ready to be buried in mailers and TV ads for the rest of their lives. Well, maybe not.
But also you have to wonder, you know, don't you want different opinions, you know, every round? I don't think, you know, I think opponents are there to bring off those ideas and to, you know, bounce off of candidates. It's also necessarily, it might be bad for your mailboxes, but it might not be a bad thing.
Sarah Kellogg is St. Louis Public Radio State House and politics reporter. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us after both the Bell and Ashcroft interviews.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Thank you.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.